that's right. It's Thursday afternoon, and it is my great pleasure to have Police Captain Gerald Brooks with us. How you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Hope you are.
I'm good. It sure is good to have you sit down with us. I tell you what, according to the Index Journal, you guys are cracking down on crack cases, whatever, all this meth, drugs, and everything. And is there any left in town?
Yes, ma'am. There's plenty.
There's plenty.
There's plenty. We've just gotten the tip of the iceberg.
Now that is frightening, Gerald.
Well, it is. We're not happy about it.
I mean, it seems like if not every day, almost every day, there is a case or cases. You've had some big drug bust or roundups. I mean, what is going on? Is Greenwood County, Greenwood City, just drug crazy?
Well, I don't think any more so than the other communities. The simple truth is, we've got a meth epidemic, not just in Greenwood and not just in South Carolina, but in virtually every state in the union. It's just one of those drugs that they don't have to have a cocoa plant grown in some other country. Mm-hmm. The ingredients you need to make it are all available right here in Greenwood, and they can read on the internet how to make it or get it through word of mouth. And it's something that they don't have to go to a dealer or whatever. They can make themselves, and that's a simple method for addicts. And when these people are addicted, they're going to get the drug one way or the other, and it's just so easy for them to make it these days.
You know, we were talking before we went on the air about how Sudafed, particularly Sudafed, is one of those drugs that is so good for helping you if you've got a cold or congestion, this type of thing. And yet it's one of the main drugs that they need, and they can get it from a pharmacy. You were saying how everybody's driver's license. Actually, whenever I go to get Sudafed, I always feel like a criminal, even though I'm not, because you get the fifth degree if you're trying to buy it.
That's right.
And we were talking about the fact that in some states they have actually made it a prescription-only drug, and that has reduced the amount of the drug that is being made. So is that the right answer?
Well, I guess that's not for me to say. I can tell you that they're, like most things, are two sides to every coin. And from a law enforcement perspective, in those states that have made that by prescription only, it has almost resolved their problems with the methamphetamine. But the downside of that is the normal law-abiding citizen who maybe needs that to handle a cold or sinus problem, currently you can walk in your favorite pharmacy and buy it over the counter, and it's not terribly expensive, and it doesn't take too long to get it and go ahead and take the first dose. But if it becomes prescription only, then you've got to schedule a doctor's appointment, and some of those are hard to come by. You know, in the case of a common cold, you may be well before you get your appointment.
Sure.
But you make a doctor's appointment, then you've got to pay, you've got to take time off from work to go to the doctor and, you know, be in the waiting room and then be seen by the doctor and then get the prescription. You've got to pay for that office visit, and then you've got to go to the pharmacy and wait to get your prescription filled. And for a person who is conscientiously obeying the law, that's pretty frustrating, the extra time and expense just to get something that for years and years we've bought over the counter and not have a problem.
And it works.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's
yes.
The thing that I personally like about it. It works. So as you look forward this year, I know last year it was, I guess, a good year for doing some of the things you wanted to do with the police department, drug enforcement, and some of the other things. How is 2015 shaping up? Because I think we've seen more drug busts in 2015. Have we so far? I mean, for so far this year?
Well, I really don't know. You know, we're early enough into 2015 that I don't know. I can tell you that our drug unit was, they've been busy this year. They were real busy last year. Don't know that I've seen a huge change. What I have seen is more publicity. And, you know, that we don't control that. But there appears to be more media interest in it. So we were making the cases all along, but we've got, again, more media interest. When we talk about crime stats, though, and I may be getting off the subject, sure. May not be answering the question that you wanted me to answer, but while we're here in 2015, let's look back to 2013. 2013 was one of the worst years, well, was the worst year on record for the city with regard to homicides. Unfortunately, we had 9 homicides, which I said all along that it was an anomaly. It wasn't the beginning of a trend. And fortunately, I turned out to be correct. In 2014, we only had 2 things that could be remotely classified as homicides, and they were both very unusual. First and foremost, then there was no firearm involved in the 2 homicides in 2014. One of them was a case where a woman with some mental health issues assaulted her mother with a hammer and killed her. Not the street crime that we saw the previous year. And the other one was a case where a man who was intoxicated took a swing at a man who was not. The man who was not intoxicated ducked and punched back, hit the man 1 time. Unfortunately, he fell, hit his head on a curb, and after 2 or 3 weeks died at the hospital. Again, no firearms involved. And so we went from 2013 having 9 homicides involving firearms and 8 in the county, if I'm not mistaken, to 2014, no homicides involving firearms, the 2 deaths I just told you about. And so far this year, knock on wood, we've had no homicides inside the city. So we're pretty pleased about that.
Well, what do you think about the firearm usage, though? Do you think, we haven't had it for homicides, but how about in some other things that are going on?
Well, firearms are much, much more prevalent with the criminal element now than they were 20 years ago. I don't think a day or night goes by that we're not arresting someone and taking a firearm from them. We talked earlier, and I told you I was with the sheriff's office the first 7 years of my law enforcement career. During that 7, and I was a pretty active deputy. I would like to think I made as many arrests as any of my fellow deputies. And I probably didn't take 10 firearms off of criminals in that 7-year period. Now we're taking 10 firearms off criminals in a week's time.
Are those illegal firearms, or are they registered to them? Do they have the concealed weapon permits?
Well, I hate to play semantics here with you, but when it comes to illegal firearms,
they're not registered. Well, are they registered to them or not registered to the people that are committing the crimes?
In South Carolina, there's no handgun registration.
Okay.
What you may be asking, are they carrying them legally or lawfully? Mm-hmm. And really, there are 2 ways you can do that. The most well-known is concealed weapons permit. And so if you've got a concealed weapons permit, yes, you can carry a gun many, many places. There are also places you can carry a gun without a concealed weapons permit. But what I'm getting at is we're arresting people who are carrying guns unlawfully. And that's either because they're underage or because they're convicted felons or because there's some type of court order that prevents them from doing it. Or they have the gun with them during the commission of a crime. And that's what I'm talking about is the criminal element early in my career was rarely armed. Nowadays,
most
always armed, and a good many law-abiding citizens, many more law-abiding citizens are armed nowadays than they used to be, and I can certainly perceive their need for that.
Sure. Well, it certainly comes across that it's important to be able to protect yourself.
That's right.
I mean, that's what it comes across.
And I support that because, as much as police would like to be everywhere all the time, chances are, when you need one of us, you're going to have to place a 911 call to get us. And we may be 60 seconds away, we may be 2 or 3 minutes away, but 60 seconds sometimes is not quick enough.
Yeah.
Most people, when they call us, they needed us before they ever dialed the number.
That's right. That's right. We are here with Police Chief Gerald Brooks, and we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash, then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Police Chief Gerald Brooks talking about what's been going on at, or what is going on down there at the police department. Of course, the police department covers the city, and of course, the sheriff's department covers the county. But one of the things that I know that you, Sheriff Tony Davis, and you, Gerald, have come together on is working together a lot more. And I know that's, I believe that's made the police and sheriff a lot more efficient.
I'm convinced that it's made us not only more efficient, but more effective. And I can't think of a good reason not to do it. The truth is, the sheriff and I serve the same constituency. He's there to serve the county residents, but all of those county residents come into the city on a regular basis. If you live in the county but come to the hospital, you've come into the city. If you come to the mall, you've come into the city. If you drive your child to Emerald High School, you've come into the city. Likewise, those that live in the city, on a daily basis, they're going into the county. If they go to Walmart, they've gone into the county. If they take the child to Greenwood High, they've gone into the county. And so the truth is, both of our residents, city and county, are crossing that line that nobody can see. It's not visibly marked out there, but they're crossing that line all day, every day. So first off, we're serving the same constituents. And then secondly, we're both working against the criminal element, and that criminal element doesn't pay attention to those jurisdictional boundaries either. And so someone that lives in the county may come inside the city and shoot someone or sell drugs, and vice versa. And so our departments need to be able to work together hand in glove seamlessly. And I guess in my career, when that doesn't happen is when someone has is jealous of their turf or has an ego problem or something like that. But I think we're wrong to have that. We've got to understand that we are here to serve the public, and we're serving that same constituency, and so let's work together and do it as efficiently and effectively as we can.
Sure.
So no excuse not to.
And you certainly have, for example, the drug detail. Don't you work with city and with county and working together on those issues?
That's right. We've combined our narcotics units into one unit. It's known as the Greenwood County Drug Enforcement Unit. And really, that's real valuable for us because, again, the dealers and the purchasers don't know or care which side of the line they're on. They just do their thing. And so if you're a city officer and you're restricted to the city limits, you may be conducting surveillance on a drug dealer, but when he goes out in the county, you got to break off your surveillance. You're not effective out there anymore. Likewise, if the county people are watching a drug dealer or trying to make a case against him and he comes into the city, if the city officers don't know what the county officers are doing, it puts us all in harm's way. It increases our risk. Sure. Because people in unmarked clothes can jump out and draw weapons, and you don't know everybody is on your same team. And so it's honestly dangerous for two different entities to work drugs in the same jurisdiction and not be communicating 100%.
I know one of the other things, though, would be is interesting, particularly, I think, here in Greenwood, is the division between the city and the county. For example, you brought up that the Walmart is in the county, but across the street in Lowe's is in the city, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, the McDonald's out parcel at Walmart, it's in the city.
Yeah.
On the same piece of property, but it's in the city. And there are other examples of things like that, but as you go out Montague Avenue from town.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the Bank of America on the right side of the road, it's in the city, and adjacent to it, Stiefel's Appliances in the city. The very last building in that block, though, is in the county. It's a part of the same building. The brick and mortar are joined, but the very last building is in the county. And as you proceed on, you've got like M&M Tire and other places. All those places are in the county until you get to Walgreens.
Well,
then Walgreens is in the city, but right across the road from it, Ruby Tuesday's is in the county. Kmart is in the county, but you go further up, and Fats Cafe is in the city. After you pass Fats, everything on the right's in the county. Bliff Funeral Home on the left is in the city. But if you go far enough up, if you go all the way up to Northside Drive where the CVS is,
right,
that's in the city. And if you turn right, Northside Baptist Church is in the city. Everything on the left is in the county. But if you go way, way on out to Northside Middle School, mm-hmm. it's in the city. And it, so it, our jurisdictional lines are absolutely crazy.
Sure. So that's another reason that it makes it difficult to have city
that's
and
right.
county, yes, you know, one totally
final,
separate.
One final example here. If you go out Emerald Road and go past Piedmont Tech, mm-hmm. Piedmont Tech is in the county. But if right. you drive a little further to Brewer Middle School, Brewer and Woodfield's, they're in the city.
Sure. So and you've got that new Walmart that's going to be in, that is in the city.
It will be in the city.
So what kind of changes is having the Walmart out there? Because we were surprised. I think we saw some figures where the Walmart, which is in the county up here, had something like 734 incidents or something.
That's
What's
right.
that going to do to the police force having a Walmart that will then be in the city?
Well, first and foremost, we're glad to get a Walmart in the city.
You know, yeah.
we love for our, you know, our commercial to grow.
Right.
And it will certainly add to our tax base. But having said that, it's also going to really tax our manpower. And we're hopeful that the city council is going to be able to get in front of that and fund some more officer positions. Because without that, we will literally be overrun. We really will.
Sure. Weren't they talking about, was it two more officers? Is that what I read? Or
well, I'm not sure what they will do.
Right.
But I can tell you that we will need to add one officer to every shift, and we've got four shifts. If we add two officers, then we've got a little help half
right.
the time. The other 50% of the time, we don't have the help, and that'll be a hardship.
That'll be a hardship, right. yeah. So these are the things. Overall, how do you think that budget-wise the police department is able to run?
Well, there's been a lot of belt tightening over the years.
I've noticed you've gotten a little skinnier. No, just teasing.
That's uncomfortable.
Right.
I think the city council does the best that they can, and I appreciate their support. But you may be aware the legislature changed some of the laws years back, and I believe it was called Act 388. And what they did, they rolled back property taxes, and part of the legislation was the state was then going to provide funding to the municipalities. Well, the state did that for a brief period of time until the economy went south. And when the, I guess it was 2008 or so with the Great
right.
Recession, when that happened, the state violated
Reneged
their
on
own
their
law.
Deal. Yes.
And I mean, let's go ahead and call it like it is. They violated their own law. The law they passed, they violated it and reduced their funding to cities and counties. And that put us in a real bind because there's also a cap on the taxes that cities and counties can raise. And so they really put the cities and counties into quite the squeeze, and we haven't been able to come out of that yet. And we really need the legislature, the state legislature, to give us some relief.
And well, they're talking about it. They're talking yeah, about it, but they're not doing anything about it.
They spend a lot more time in discussion and sometimes end up still not passing the bill that they should pass.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So we're going to be talking some more about, you know, one of the things that has been all over the news, of course, is Ferguson and the use of body cameras. We're going to talk some about that. We're going to be talking a little bit about teenage drinking and where that's at. And then I think we're going to take up this Mike Pitts and his law that he thinks and others think down there in the legislature that they should do some pot legislation. So I want to find out what Police Chief Gerald Brooks thinks about that. So why don't you keep it right here on WCRS. Hey, if you got a question, give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Police Chief Gerald Brooks. We've been having a good conversation talking about a lot of different things. But you know, Gerald, I was bringing up how they were going to start bringing back working, like cleaning the roads and this type of thing with the details with the inmates from the detention center. But you told me that one of the things that's a problem with that is there's not the incentive to go out and do this. Can you explain? I mean, I'm flabbergasted that what you're going to tell us that our legislator did.
That's right. Well, you know, nobody wants to hear about the good old days. But in the good old days, it was mandatory. You were a prisoner, and if they decided to take you out on the work detail, you had to go out on the work detail. Now, the good news was for every one day you worked, you got credit for 2 days of time served. Years ago, our legislature passed some legislation and made a requirement here in South Carolina that every local inmate gets credit 2 days for each 1 day that he or she serves. And that credit can't be taken away without an awful lot of good solid reasons and a hearing and things of that nature. And so what that's done is that's taken away the incentive for some of the inmates to work. Now, having said that, some of them will still volunteer. And so
but
you will see.
They don't get any credit or anything for doing this.
You know, I think the only advantage to them is maybe some fresh air and exercise and a slight change of environment. But other than that, they're not getting an additional credit for time served.
So we don't have the desire to do this. Now, do you have any idea why the legislature did this? I mean, I have often wondered why we didn't have, well, for lack of a better way to call them, chain gangs. I mean, you know, you used to years ago see them out there cleaning the big highways anywhere, working on projects, and at least you felt, well, they're doing something. And so many people have said to me, why don't we have people out doing this? Well, I think you just explained it.
That's right. You know, and when I grew up, we literally had chain gangs come through the neighborhood, like cutting right away and cleaning out ditches and things of that nature. And I guess it served as a deterrent because our parents would point them out to us and say, if you don't behave, you're going to end up like that. And we looked over there and they were in prison stripes and they had shackles on the ankles and they were chained together. And there was a guard standing there with a shotgun and he didn't look too friendly. And it was a deterrent. You know, we behaved the whole rest of the day.
Yeah. Do you have any idea why that changed?
I really don't.
Was it considered unfair that those that worked could get, I don't really understand why you would take that incentive away, or even if they wouldn't, since they changed the law, why didn't they make it okay, you could get half a day or give some incentive for going out and working? Because we all look at people that are sitting in jails or all these other things as not being contributing to society.
That's right. Well, I wish I understood it, but I don't. It's one of those many, many things that I don't understand.
Yeah. Wow. So right there is going to be a problem for getting guys and gals, I guess, to go out and work, because all they have to do is sit there, and they'll get 2 days for every day that they serve.
That's right. Judge gives you 30 days, and you walk out in 15.
Wow. You know, it's really expensive to house people in the prison system, isn't it?
It is. I've seen a lot of statistics that indicate that it's really cheaper to send somebody to college than it is to send them to prison for 4 years.
How, as far as the courts and everything being backed up, how is the police department and, of course, the solicitor, how are our court cases coming through as far as the police department is coming through? Do you have a lot of backlog, or is it pretty current, or...?
Honestly, there's a huge backlog, and the problem, as I see it, is with the number of judges available to serve on the bench in South Carolina. That number is dictated by the state legislatures, however many judgeships they fund, and they have not funded anywhere near enough. And obviously, money is the root of the problem there. But if you look further downstream, here's what you see. The legislators realize this. If we put funding in the budget for more judges, that will begin to solve the problem. But as soon as we put more judges on the bench, then the solicitors are going to come to us and say, we need more funding for solicitors now because we've got more court time. And if you fund the solicitors, then the public defenders are going to jump up and say, look, you funded the solicitors to help them with this caseload. You need to also fund the public defenders. And when the next step after that is the Department of Corrections will say, well, you're convicting more people now.
I knew that's where you were going.
And so we need to build more prisons and we need to hire more correctional officers. And then the probation and parole officer is going to jump up and say, you put more people in, you're going to be getting more people out. And so we need to increase. And so the legislators can see if we give the state the judges they need, it's going to downstream going to cost so many more millions and millions of dollars. And so they won't do it. And we're all suffering because of that. You know, they say justice delayed is justice denied. And we've got many people in our current local detention facility that have been there for 3 years and their case has not been called.
Wow.
And I think that's bad, not only for the criminal, because I'd like to see him go ahead and get convicted and serve his time and get on the state's budget rather than on our local budget. But it's also bad for the victims because they've been victimized. They know that law enforcement caught the person, but they're waiting for this thing to go to court. And the older the case gets, often the harder it gets to make that case because people move away, people pass away, people's memories fade, people lose interest in something to something they were really upset about 3 years ago. Maybe they're not as upset after 3 years. And it just weakens our case. And it's tough when they call a case and send us a notification. They want the officer there, and the officer doesn't work with us anymore. He completely left law enforcement. Now he lives in West Virginia. And that has happened.
Sure. So, but one of the chief functions of our government is law enforcement, isn't it?
I would think so.
I mean, it is. Right. Taking care of the citizenry, whether it's on the federal level or on the state level. And yet do you think we have more crime than we did 20 years ago?
Yes, ma'am, we sure do. Now, I guess in Greenwood, I have to admit, you know, Greenwood has grown, and maybe that's why. But, for instance, I told you earlier that I spent my first 7 years in law enforcement with the sheriff's office. When I worked at the sheriff's office on patrol, we had two cars per shift. And so anytime I was out there in a patrol car, there was one other car. One of us worked the north end of the county, one of us worked the south end of the county.
If somebody, you were able to cover it?
If somebody took a day off, well, we were busy. Oftentimes, we were busy. But, you know, we did it with two cars. Now, you know, there are more probably around 6 to 8 cars. And, again, that's just Greenwood County.
Right.
I don't know how many cars the police department had at the time. But I know that the way Greenwood has grown, there's a lot more work out there. And so both departments are larger than they were.
Sure. Well, it just seems like that you're right as far as moving people through the system. What about this right to a speedy trial?
Well, you know, it's there on paper.
It's there on paper.
It's not real often invoked, at least in our court system, but an inmate sure or a person sure has the right to petition the court. And generally when they do that, the court will take steps to get that case heard. I guess my experience has been sometime within the next 90 days to 6 months.
Wow.
But you better be serious about wanting a trial, because if you petition the court for a speedy trial and then at the last minute decide you want to plead guilty, you've already kind of aggravated the judge. And that may be reflected in the sentencing. I don't know the judge will ever admit it, but it may be reflected in the sentencing.
All right. Well, we are here with Police Chief Gerald Brooks. Let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to be talking marijuana, folks, and who knows what else we'll get into. So you stay right here on WCRS.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. You know, they used to say you're on candid camera. Today, it seems like we're on cameras everywhere. Gerald, I understand even our police department here has cameras on the officers.
Yes, we'd like to have more. We don't have it fully populated yet because of the budgetary constraints. But we began buying those cameras maybe 2 or 3 years ago, phasing them in. And so each year, more and more officers are wearing the body cameras. But by and large, they're a good tool, and I think people will get used to them.
Do you basically, do you think that has this, does it keep our officers, I'll say, above board, or is that not really an issue? You know, we talk about the Ferguson issue was all over the place for months. Then you had, of course, New York, and there's been several high-profile cases out there. And I guess in Ferguson, they didn't have the body cameras. But do you think that, that having body cameras on officers makes for the officers to know, hey, I've got a body camera, I better be doing things by the book?
That's right. I think that's one of the real benefits. You know, I think first and foremost, if you get into law enforcement, you should come in with attitude that I'm going to do this job the right way. And I think that body camera just helps, because the officer literally affixes it to his clothing. He turns it on. He knows it's on. And so
really, can they turn it off?
They can turn it off, but we have policy that allows them to turn it off at certain times. But, you know, if enough officers have enough cameras, one of these days somebody's going to turn their camera off. And when they do, they're going to get in trouble for that.
Sure.
But the cameras should be on at appropriate times. You know, and ideally it will always do what our, you know, we've had video cameras in the automobiles for a long time now.
Sure.
And those cameras have consistently shown that our officer's account of what took place was accurate, and that the officer conducted himself appropriately. There are rare occasions when officers in any department may do something that's unprofessional, but that needs to be caught. It needs to be exposed. The person needs to be dealt with. And so I'm in favor of those cameras. They've got downsides, but I think the positives far outweigh the negatives.
What are some of the downsides in having police officers with cameras?
Well, you know, one for us right now is the budgetary thing, because if you're getting all that video, you've got to store that video. And if you know anything about storing data, it gets expensive. It takes up space on servers and stuff like that. And so although the cameras are expensive, storing the data in a method that's retrievable is just very, very expensive. And so it will tax our budgets, and it'll be something else that our local agencies will, or our local governments will have to fund. That's one downside to them. The second downside is that most of the cameras that are reasonably priced are worn on the officer's clothing. The downside of that is that the camera is not necessarily filming what the officer is seeing. In other words, if the officer looks to his right or to his left, he sees something that the camera doesn't pick up.
It has to be right in front of him.
That's right. It was whichever way the camera's
right.
Facing. If the camera, and they're making some now that attach like to eyeglasses or something, mm-hmm. and that way when the officer looks to the right, the camera moves to the right. But the downside is if the camera's looking straight ahead, the officer looks to the right, and what he sees to the right causes him to take some action that then is called into question but is not captured on video, we're facing a real uphill battle, because the officer saw it, he testifies to it, but the video didn't capture it. And so that's one of the weaknesses. Another concern has to do with privacy. People are going to call officers into their home, and the officer's going to go in, and he's going to have a reason to have that camera initiated or owned. And there'll be some people who later will realize a camera was on, and they were in my house, and they were filming, and I don't like that, and I have a right not to have police come inside and film or something. And you know, answer is, well, you called us, and the camera's just, it's going to become a part of the job. One of these days, all law enforcement will be wearing those cameras.
Sure. Now, does the Sheriff's Department have some too?
They do. Like us, I don't think they've fully populated the department with them, but also like us, they're expanding that program as the budget allows.
Now, and are there any, I'll say, laws or any regulations on how long video has to be kept?
Currently, the South Carolina legislature is working on that. In the absence of any laws, we at the department have developed our own policy, and we're retaining those, again, taking up space on our server, but we're retaining those because really ever since Watergate, nobody has accepted the excuse that, you know, well, we had it, but we don't have it anymore. You know, if you filmed it, doggone, you need to be able to produce that film.
Sure.
And if you can't, you look wrong no matter how right you are.
Sure.
And you've heard those saying that it's not good enough to be right, you've got to look right. And so we've got to have that video to look right.
Sure. Now, what about this law that Mike Pitts, I believe, is in favor of, about small amounts of pot should not be illegal? Where do you fall on this, Gerald?
Well, first and foremost, I've got to tell you that I really like and respect Mike Pitts. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the best House members in the South Carolina legislature. And
he has a law enforcement background.
He does, and he has been good to law enforcement, and it's important that we keep him in the legislature. Again, my hat's off to him. I've got a lot of respect for him. Having said that, this is an issue that he and I fall on different sides. I have heard him say, I believe on this same radio station, that when he was in law enforcement, he didn't have too much trouble out of the people using marijuana, that they tended to maybe be more peaceful, maybe call them peaceniks or something, I don't know. But he didn't have to fight those people, whereas he did might have to fight the rowdy drunk. I had a similar experience in the same time frame. I've been in law enforcement since 1976, and I can tell you back in the 70s, no, I didn't have to fight people that were smoking marijuana. They were a more peaceful group. But the marijuana out there today, as they say, it's not your daddy's marijuana. It's a lot more potent than the old stuff was. And the people are different. And I can tell you that we routinely have people resisting arrest that we're catching with small amounts of marijuana. And they seem to be just as willing to become violent and resist arrest as the people that have had too much to drink or too much something else. And so my perspective there is, or my experience is different. It aligns closely with his back in the 70s, but what we're seeing now in 2015, we're not seeing the peaceful marijuana smokers. Now, having said that, I'm sure they're out there,
right?
But they're not on the street. They're probably a more mature group that are smoking it discreetly in their home or at their party or whatever, and they're not coming to our attention. The ones that come to our attention, the people out there on the street causing a problem. But that new marijuana is a lot more powerful, is a little different chemical makeup, and I see it as a problem.
Now, one of the things that Mike Pitts is, reason that he wants to do this, I believe, is because he says that somebody gets arrested and with a marijuana, a small amount, a joint, or very small amounts, it ruins their lives.
Well, I would submit first off that maybe the marijuana will ruin their life if they don't stop it. There's a lot of literature out there that indicates that. But also don't think that's 100% accurate. And again, I'm not accusing Representative Pitts of misleading anybody, because he is a very straight shooter.
He is.
But there are things that are available to people who are first-time offenders in marijuana, pretrial intervention, what's known as conditional discharge. And to simplify that, rather than pleading guilty, they can ask the court for one of those dispositions. There's a program crafted for them. They have to successfully complete that program. At that time, the charge is dismissed. They can get their record expunged, and they walk away that they don't have a record, and it doesn't ruin their future. And so I don't really see the necessity of it. I guess what I see instead is the harmful effects of these drugs, particularly on people and their families. And one thing that maybe a lot of the legislators don't experience is what we in law enforcement experience is we have the parent coming to us absolutely distraught that their child has gotten involved with drugs, and they've seen their grades plummet. They've seen them give up their part-time jobs. They've seen them just
change.
I'm not trying to make a pun here, but they've seen them go to pot. And we've seen such heartbreak and hardship, and they're a lot of adverse. It's adverse to their health, mm-hmm. and others around them. And I've yet to see the positives of unlawful drug use and unlawful drugs. They seem to be ruining lives, and we encounter those people, you know, at their very worst. And that's what we see, is the ruined lives.
Sure. You know, one of the things that I think Lieutenant Brandon Strickland had said, that they're finding that marijuana is involved in about 90% of the charges in their drug investigations. We have a simple possession of marijuana every time we come in contact with someone, he said. He said that the drug unit typically develops confidential information through a small quantities of marijuana. Marijuana is a tool to get to the more dangerous drugs.
That's right.
Is that what we're seeing here? So even though it's marijuana, it's really more complicated because there usually is something else involved. Is that what you're saying? You're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. What do you think, Police Chief Brooks?
I agree with Lieutenant Strickland on that. It's always been, I think, known to be a gateway drug. And, you know, I think a lot of times there's a little bit of a barrier. A person says, I'm not going to do this because it's unlawful. But at some point through peer pressure or something, they finally say, well, okay, I'm going to try it. And when they do, unconsciously, they've crossed a line. And they try it, and they maybe get high, and they like it. And so they think less and less about it being unlawful. And eventually, you know, there was nothing wrong with marijuana, and so they're going to try a little cocaine. And they may try crack cocaine. They may try something else. And again, we in law enforcement we've seen the lives ruined. And often not just a person's own life, but some of these people, and if you read these articles about the meth addicts, how many times have you seen where there are children in the home? And so we've got a couple of adults that have no more sense than to mix these chemicals, all of which are harmful, into a combination that's even more harmful, and they consume it. And they're doing that in the presence of children. We've got children breathing fumes. We've got children in houses that are subject to fire or an explosion because of the meth lab there. Harmful chemicals where you have to come in and the building officials have to condemn the house or the apartment or whatever because of what's there. Again, we're here to protect people who can't protect themselves. And some people would say, look, they're adults, let them do what they want to do. Well, I have a problem with that when there's a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old in the house. I really do.
Absolutely. One last question. As far as drugs in the area, are we seeing more drugs coming in, more high-power drugs coming in, or is it just the meth and pot? What is coming into the city and the county?
Really, we have a little bit of everything. You know, it certainly looks like a meth epidemic because that's just so readily available. So we have a lot of meth, but we also have a lot of marijuana. Honestly, we haven't seen the cocaine or crack cocaine go away. We do see a little bit of heroin. And having said that, I will tell you that one of the big problems that nobody seems to pay attention to is the prescription pills. There are an awful lot of people in Greenwood who are addicted to prescription pills and are getting them one way or another, in most cases, you know, through unlawful means. And those pills certainly have their place, and they're very helpful to people under certain conditions. But once the patient becomes addicted, they're stuck, and that's real unfortunate. But we do have a huge problem with prescription pills.
That's right, and that's why I guess you have so many of the pill pickups where the police officers gather them all up. One of the things that I think is most interesting is the fact is how many people end up with prescription drugs that they're not supposed to have because they're visiting somebody that does have them and they use their bathroom. And that's where we were always told to keep our prescriptions.
That's
and
right.
Just moving them out of that place and hiding them someplace else could make a big difference.
That's right. You know, we have fortunately, we don't have, and I hate to say this, because one burglary anywhere in Greenwood is too many. But our incidences of burglaries are kind of down currently. But we do have people who are committed to these burglaries, and a lot of times they're breaking in residents, and they know exactly what they want. You know, in the old days, they were looking for a VCR or something like that. Well, nobody's looking for a VCR anymore. What they're going in now is they want guns and drugs. And so they will break into a place knowing there's a burglar alarm, but they also know they got 2 or 3 minutes. And what we see is they kick in the back door, they go straight to the master bedroom, they pull a pillowcase off to put their loot in, and they look under the mattress and in the nightstand for the weapon, drop it in, they go to the bathroom, they rake all the prescription medicines out of the medicine cabinet, and they hit the door and they're gone when we get there. And that's kind of a common MO that we've seen over the last few years.
Wow. Well, it has been great having you here today. Thanks so much for coming out and being the willing victim here today on Meet Me at the Diner. Police Chief Gerald Brooks, thanks so much for coming today.
Thank you.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.